Hey, there's that smiley face again.
Hey, how about that?
I know. You know what's really cool about your smiley face? I always talk about it because if people are listening to the audio podcast version, they don't get to see it.
Right, right. I was thinking about that, you know, the other day. It's our cue for getting started, and I'm a happy guy. But, you know, that's the one thing that on the audio broadcast, I do think I have a good smile. I know you do.
Well, you know, I practiced it for years because I didn't used to smile as a kid because I grew up on a farm by myself as an only child. And if it wasn't the cows or the sheep or the pigs or the one horse that didn't like me, I had nobody else to smile at. So I just had to teach myself as I got into sales that you probably ought to look a little happier.
Well, and now all of a sudden, smile all the time, you look like a crazy person.
Well, that's true too. But you know, I found that it's so easy to smile a lot when you're just happy every day. And I just, you know, following the moniker I use, but, you know, love what I do and do what I love, right? We and I both follow that. And I'm just happy every day.
I am too. Plus, I found that it's kind of like when people used to ask me how I'm doing, I always say, you know, dynamite now, but I used to always say unbelievable.
And I like that.
The beauty of that one, much like a smile, is it keeps them guessing.
You know, exactly.
It could be either way, you know?
It could be. Keeping people guessing is good, but we shouldn't keep our guest guessing about whether we're going to bring him on or not, should we?
Let's bring him on.
Okay, let's go.
All right.
Welcome to Building Wins Live with host, the hybrid road warrior himself, Randy Chafee, and producer-director, Wes Wyatt.
Whether we're talking about sales, marketing, tech, or industry news, we want to bring you the best tips, tricks, and info to build wins.
Now, let's get to the show.
Hey, good afternoon, Dennis. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. How about you, Randy?
It'd be tough to be any better, but I get to be out in the road this morning talking to customers and doing a couple podcasts in my hotel room, as you can see by my background. Life is good, man. Life is good.
Yeah, it's that ability to feel like I get to go to work instead of I have to go to work, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, and isn't that amazing if you have that? And I feel so blessed to have that feeling that even when the bad little things happen, and you're going to, you have bad things happening today, right? Stuff don't go right. Oh, yeah. Stuff goes wrong. But yeah, you smile about it and go, that's all right. I'm still doing what I love, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, why would you be doing anything else?
It, you know, Wes and I talk about this a lot, and we're getting right into it. But before we do that, hold that, because I do not want to get too far in. I want to make sure that you get your dues. Retired Lieutenant Colonel, United States Air Force. And I want to thank you, sir, me, for Wes, and all the audience. We appreciate your service.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
No. We appreciate you. I'm a big supporter, as Wes is, and you'll find most people that follow me, Wes, or Building Wins Live, are big supporters of the military, and we get to do what we're doing today. I never lose sight of this. I get to do this today. I was out seeing customers this morning, back in the hotel room to do a couple of podcasts, go to dinner tonight, and I get to do all this stuff, and it's never lost on me because of people way, way, way before your time, during your time, current day, and in the future, and that's not lost on me, so.
Well, I appreciate it. That's one of my philosophies, too, is to be grateful for compliments, for whatever comes your way. Be grateful.
Yes. It's you know, when you start living that grateful lifestyle, it does make everything in your life better, doesn't it?
Yeah, I have a friend he's a big coach, Chip Baker, and his tagline on that is an attitude of gratitude gives you altitude. So,
like it.
Sticking with that is a great way to approach everything during the day, no matter what's happening.
Oh, exactly. I did a short little video back a while ago, and I might redo it because I really liked it, and it got me thinking. I was at a national show in Louisville, and I had to leave. And I said, "See, I just did it." I said I had to leave at 4 o'clock in the morning, and I had to drive 5 hours to get to a customer, a really, really good customer friend's open house, right? Yeah. And as I'm about an hour into this trip, I'm going, wish I didn't have to do this. I'm doing that negative self-talk, right?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden I go, what are you doing? You get to get up at 4 o'clock. You get to drive 5 hours and you get to spend the day with not only a good customer friend that you really enjoy, but somebody that because of his business, that's how I make my living. So that's a get to, right? That's not a got, a have to, right?
And the other thing, too, is that's the way you power yourself through adversity, too. I mean, the Navy SEALs do it. The guys that make it through the training are the guys that take it one day at a time. You know, instead of, oh, I've got 60 days till I finish this training. I got 59. It's, well, if I can make it to breakfast, if I can make it to lunch, if I can make it to, of course, I'm sitting here talking about food. So maybe for you, it's the next glass of red wine, right?
It might be. It might be. And by the time this show is released, I'll bend somewhere into my 75 hard program, which means I have no more Dr. Peppers, as I call them, which is my code word for Cabernet. Okay. And I don't know where that came up. It's kind of red. And in case I, at one point in time, Dennis, I thought, well, if there's any people that listen to me, wherever that may be, that don't maybe like alcohol or wine, I'll use a code word, right?
Yeah.
But soon I got tired of using the code word without telling anybody what it was, because to me it was funny. Yeah. And I also look at it this way. You get the whole package with me, and if the fact that I like a Cabernet now and then's a deal breaker, I guess such is life, right?
We refer to it in the house, at least all my sons are grown up, but we refer to it as mommy juice, so...
Mommy, I like that. Yeah, I like that. So, Dennis, tell us. Obviously, we've established the military, but let's go back a little bit before we start talking about leadership and your book and how, because I really want to focus in with anything you want. But I love military folks, especially officers. Excuse me, and how that correlates to business, right? Into everyday life and the leadership and the lessons we've learned. But before we get there, tell us a little bit about where you come from and what you did and how you got to where you are today.
Well, I think the simplest thing is to start where I how I got here today. You know, as a 10-year-old, my father was in the Air Force. We're sitting at the end of a runway, and here comes these two F-4 Phantoms screaming by in full afterburner. You know, that feeling you get in your chest when they're going by. And I'm pumping my fist at my dad going, Dad, that's what I want to do when I grow up. Of course, my wife says I haven't reached that point yet, but that's a different story. But
that'd be an all day one.
Yeah. But from then it was, I had a singleness of purpose. I was going to be a professional pilot. So I went to the Air Force Academy and went to Air Force pilot training. I flew in the Air Force active duty for a while, joined the reserves, got hired by Alaska Airlines, had a 28-year career there. And then at age 56, like the proverbial 18-year-old graduating from high school, what do I do now? Because what happened was, at the time, I was out mountain bike riding, you know, a healthy exercise, exhilarating. You can't imagine the thrill of climbing up one of those hills east of Seattle in the foothills of the Cascades and come screaming down in between the trees on one of these single bike paths. Well, you have to make it up the hill. And I didn't make it up the hill one day. I had a heart attack, and two hikers happened to find me on the hill unconscious. And that was the end of my aviation career, the flying portion. I had a couple other jobs that were aviation related, but like we referred to earlier, they just didn't capture that excitement of going to work. Mm-hmm. And then one day this lady comes up to me, a friend of mine, and she says, how'd you like to speak to one of our groups? And I just laughed at her. I said, about what? And she says, I've looked at your resume. You went to all the Air Force leadership schools. You headed up a department at Alaska Airlines with 650 pilots and 40 instructors. You could talk about leadership. And it was as if the sky opened up and this bright ray of sunshine came down on me. And it was like... Now, the proverbial God spoke to me and said, hey, this would be pretty cool. And I felt, and that's how I got started with speaking and writing. Wow. And it's now it's exciting. I can't, you've probably done it, but that exhilarating feeling when you get in front of a crowd and you start giving your message, and within, you know, a minute or so, you know whether you've got them. And, mm-hmm. and when you have them, that adrenaline rush, you know,
right.
they're going to like my story. They're going to like what I'm trying to get across there. So that's where I've been for the last 10 years or so is doing speaking, writing, and leadership workshops.
Yeah. And you're a CEO of your, I assume it's your own business, Full Throttle Leadership. That's kind of the central point of what everything you do with writing and speaking and all your other work is through Full Throttle, which I love that title because it's, I can't remember the word for it. There's a word that would make me sound really, really smart, but but my wife will remind me that I'm not that smart anyway. So it'd be irrelevant. It'd be short-lived excitement, but, where Full Throttle is a play of words from being a pilot, right?
Especially, exactly. Yeah.
But it also, that's the way we need to live our life. That's the way I like to live my life and what I do. If I'm in,
right,
it's just Full Throttle. Let's drop the hammer, right? Let's go.
Exactly. I mean, that's what gets the excitement going. What you know, when you take off in an airplane, you go to Full Throttle to take off. And in business, you need to take off somewhere. I mean, people have plans, you know, I've got plans up on my bookshelves. I got plans in my head, but until you execute them, they're just plans. So, you know, put the throttle, full throttle yeah. on and see where it goes. Enjoy the ride.
Exactly. Yeah. And I love that because it's well known how many plans, how many ideas, how many I should have, and I'm going to, and I want to, that we talk about, right? But it'd be like almost again using the flying as an example.
Yeah.
If you taxi around the runway all day, you're not going to get into battle. You're not going to get. You're not going to protect the ground troops, or you're not going to get the Alaska Air people from Juneau to San Francisco or something, right?
Yeah,
at
exactly.
some point, you got to drop the hammer, release the brake and go, right?
Yeah. And there's all kinds of plans that you do or checks that you do, coordination with people. But the actual execution is really important. I kind of use the analogy of when you first went bowling, they put those darn gutter bumpers up.
Whoa, I still use those. Come on.
But he said, I don't need those things. But sure enough, it went into the gutter.
Mm-hmm.
And then after a while, you got a little bit better and started getting some pins. And eventually they dropped them and maybe even started getting good scores. But think about this. If you never roll your ball, you're never going to get any pins. Same thing with starting to take off or getting your business going and sustaining it. You know, it's one of those things of, you can do all kinds of things, but you have to execute. So it's better to just jump in and do something and adapt along the way for any mistakes and stuff than to sit back and go, I don't have all the information. I don't, you know, it's an executed plan is much better than having the perfect plan and missing an opportunity.
Right.
You know,
right.
And you've seen that in your business where they, where somebody misses an opportunity because they're still waiting for all the information. You got to take a chance sometime, you know?
Well, exactly. And the old done is better than perfect, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there's a, because I've always, I figured out as I got older, one advantage of getting older besides not being dead is that you start figuring out stuff now and then. Yeah. And one of them is the bar to perfect will always keep raising on you.
Yeah.
It's like one of those things that's going to happen forever. It doesn't matter how perfect you think you are. Tomorrow there's going to be a bar that's raised just a little higher. So I think but you can reach a form of excellence, right?
Yeah.
By getting done and moving on.
That's like that Vince Lombardi quotation where he's talking to his team saying, gentlemen, we're going to pursue perfection, knowing all the while that we'll never attain it, but in the process, we'll achieve excellence.
Exactly. And I
mean, perfection is a good goal, but probably are never going to be there.
Exactly. You
know? You're probably never going to be there, but excellence is if that's where you reach, then you're doing pretty darn well.
You are. Yeah. Well, and the other thing, and it gets talked about a lot too, but if you get started, And I'm not saying, I don't think either of us are saying, and here's going to be a word that'll take me back to my fact that I'm kind of a little bit older, willy-nilly, right? Yeah. I'm not saying you sit down one day and we're going to start a business with three guys over a couple of Dr. Peppers at the bar, and with no more planning, we just go invest $1 million.
Right.
That would be just stupid and insane, right? But once you got a plan together, the beautiful thing about being done and moving on is you know there's going to be issues. You know it's not going to be perfect, but you're adjusting from a much higher level, right? You're adjusting from a different place.
Well, there's a process that was invented by an Air Force pilot. And if you think about Top Gun, Maverick entering into a dogfight, the first thing they always did was they observed, hey, what's going on? Orient themselves and then decide what they're going to do and then act. And once you start acting, then you can adjust and start that whole thing over again. So it's observe, orient, decide, and act. And it's called an OODA loop, you know, OODA. And by doing that, you're constantly seeking perfection, all the while hoping that you reach excellence, you know, and you're adapting to the situation as it evolves in front of your eyes. Right. And if some businesses are not as dynamic, but as a dogfight, but there's still critical points where decisions have to be made. And the most important part is executing it. I mean, if you sit back and let things happen, then whatever happens is going to drive the outcome. But what you can do as a leader or as a follower, what you can do to alter, change, or affect that outcome is key to business, to dogfights, to almost a football game, baseball game. What you do to alter, change, or affect that outcome is critical.
I just made a note, adapt, because you've used the word adapt a numerous times, and I think I put in my phone every day, I have three things. I have, and I look at my day starts tonight. Tomorrow starts tonight. That's the way I look at things, because I believe in planning. So I put it 7:30 in the evening. It never leaves my phone. I plan. Now that could be 2 or 3 hours worth, but usually if you're on your game, it's review more than plan and adjust or something. But so it could be an hour and a half. It could be 12 minutes or it could be 12 seconds. Right. But I want to be cognizant of it. But one of the most important things I have at 7:30 in the morning is adapt, because I realize and want to remind myself, I may not have to adapt at 7:30, but I want to remind myself that whatever plans I put into place, there's the non-negotiables and the negotiables, right?
Right.
The non-negotiables, barring just unforeseen events, I probably can't adapt that one. I need to do that, right? But like in business, having a Zoom meeting or a podcast with Dennis at 8:00 in the morning, I should not miss that, right? Unless the world ends. But if I put in follow up with this customer to see if he got his samples and how they came in, I might have plugged that in for 8, but I can adapt to moving that someplace later, right? And do something else that comes in that's more important right at that moment, right? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And I think what you're referring to is basically plan out your days, get the 3, 4, 5 things you want to accomplish for tomorrow. And then throughout the day, there's going to be these pop-up things that happen, and you have to prioritize them. Are they important enough to bump one of the things that I want to accomplish on it? And it's the same thing that a pilot does when an emergency happens. What's the most important thing? And, you know, even pilots take a moment to figure things out, even if it's something as drastic as an engine fire. We used to say, punch the clock. And you go, why would you punch the clock? Well, one, it keeps you from jumping in and doing something like maybe shutting down the wrong engine. But the other thing is almost everything's going to be measured from that beginning point. So why not have a reference point? If nothing else, I know that I have an hour and a half of flying time from that moment left if I'm out over water or something like that. But you do the same thing in business. You go through the day and pop-ups happen. Well, how important is that pop-up? And we, there's all kinds of machinations, checklists and things like that that people have, maybe even applications. But to say, this has number one priority, I have to drop this pop-up and still take care of this. Or that one can actually be done by somebody else, delegated, or that can be sent to the next day. So there's a lot of things that can be moved around. And, you know, not that I'm hogging the time here, but you reminded me of a Mike Tyson, the heavyweight boxing champion, being asked after a fight to say, "Hey, how'd your plan work out?" He said something along the lines of, "Everybody got a plan till they get smacked in the face." And the point is, that's such simplistic language of taking care of or adapting to the situation, you know.
Right.
Everybody got a plan until they get smacked in the face.
Well, that's a good one. And, you know, that reminds me of, and this goes way back before him, and so it's been passed on forever, but I think when we were talking a month ago, that I'd mentioned that my older son, it was a Marine in the, or is a former Marine. He was in Iraq in the Second Gulf War. And everybody in the military, and you'd know better than most, and I won't get the words exactly right, but all plans are great until the first shot is fired, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And then it's really is improvise and adapt, because if it didn't go exactly the way it did, and we're supposed to charge that hill, but there's 500 people shooting down, probably charging that hill is not a good idea, right?
Yeah, it might be time to have an alternative.
Right, exactly. You know, I want to get your take on, because it's really an interesting point you made a minute ago about pop-ups and you have your certain ideas during the day. This is, and if this will go back away from military a little bit and into your business coaching and training and teaching world that you do, I travel a lot on the road, right?
Okay.
And when I plan trips, I call it the shopping mall procedure. And what I do with that is I set up, and all shopping malls had the anchor stores, right?
Right.
If I'm going to go to the mall, I definitely want to go to Macy's and I want to go to Penny's and I want to go to whatever.
Yeah.
All the other shops, I may or may not, just depending. And so I design my trips around that. I designed every day, or every trip probably more so, is those anchors people that for whatever reason, I have to see them. It could be because of their size.
Right.
If they deserve to see me because of their volume, they do. It could be that we're working on something important right now, whatever the reason. And then I fill in the other spots when and if I have time, because I may have to walk by Bed Bath & Beyond or somebody because I really have to pick up my package at Macy's. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Is that a concept that makes any sense at all?
No, it does. It fits right into what we've been discussing all along.
Yeah.
You know? And that's actually the way the mall is designed, is to get you to stop in for an impulse buy. Well, if you have the discipline to stick to the anchor stores, maybe you're not gonna impulsively buy something, or buy something you really don't need, or if you have the discipline to. Just not stop at any of them. I go into the mall, I get what I want, and I leave. But, you know, it does take some of the fun out of it. You might miss an opportunity. Maybe that new dictaphone that's connected to software and an application or something is something that would really help you, and you didn't even go in there to shop for it. So
right.
There's
right.
Good ways and bad ways of approaching that. But for the most part, we're talking about hit the anchors or make sure you get the three items, four items you want to get done tomorrow, despite the pop-up.
Right.
But the pop-up may be something critical that you have to, all your attention goes to immediately too, you know?
Right. So what do you say to folks that feel like they're very good at micromanaging themselves? They're very good at multitasking. Do you see multitasking as doable? Is that even a term that's technically workable?
I don't know if you can effectively multitask and do everything well, but you can do one thing well at a time and the cumulative effects will put you towards, you know, we were just talking to Vince Lombardi, it'll put you towards perfection, but you have to accept the fact that you're not going to be great at everything. And if you're trying to do everything, what was the quote I heard the other day? You can do anything, but you can't do everything.
Yeah.
You know, that was a great quote I heard the other day. It struck home on me. You know, I'm good on those bumper sticker quotes. You
know? Yeah. Oh, yeah. I am, if I can remember them.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I have to watch myself sometimes, because if I see stuff like that, or I'm big on, if I see a car that's got a business that's got a sign that is in an area, I'm going, they're in the metal roofing world. Maybe I should figure out what they're doing, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So I take a picture of their truck when I drive by, and I'm thinking someday somebody's going to take offense to that. But
yeah.
But I like bumper stickers, except for I can't remember what I said, and then I screw them up. That's like me with jokes.
Yeah.
I don't tell a lot of, Wes and I find ourselves quite humorous when we're just bantering with each other, when we're having some wine or whatever. But I'm not big in telling a structured joke. Yeah. I guarantee I'm going to forget the punchline before I get to it. Because
they actually take it, to be good at it, you actually have to practice them, though, don't you?
Yeah, you do. You do.
I'm like you. I probably screw it up the first time, so I usually tell it at home before I. If it's tellable at home, you know, you got to watch some of those that they're not. They're a little off color sometimes.
You know? Well, yeah, I might have heard once or twice from my wife, or 1,000, that Randy. You're not with your boys.
Yeah.
You know, as in not my boys, but my boys as my customer friends,
or
people, you know, it's like, you really, I don't think you're going to say that to me.
Yeah.
I thought it was funny. See, I'm not even saying it's not funny, but why did you, cause I have no filter, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you've been with the 18 years, you know, I have no filter now. What are you worrying about?
Right. Yeah.
But you know, we've already established this, but let's talk about people that find themselves in business, whether it's, and everybody's in sales, right? Whether you're, whatever you do in business, we're all in sales, right?
Yeah.
But you don't have the title sales, but you're in business, or you have the title sales. It doesn't really matter for this discussion. What if you're not loving what you do right now? What do you do with that? Do you just bail, or do you really find the reasons why? What's your CEO full throttle leadership opinion on that?
Well, I think it's in the past, I don't know where you are. I'm right at the edge of baby boomer. What is it? The generation before that. I forgot what it's slipping my mind there.
I forget what those are too. But yeah.
The greatest generation. That's right.
Greatest. Yeah. There you go.
The days of working at a place for 30 years, which I fall into that, but working in a place for 30 years are pretty much gone. And I'm already seeing that with my sons and with some of their friends and everything. And the statistics are showing that people nowadays that are starting out will typically have 8 to 9 jobs in their lifetime.
Wow.
And I'm not talking about flipping burgers at McDonald's, right, but I'm talking about real jobs. And so it's gone to that whole concept of capturing your imagination, capturing your attention, and that attention span's gone from 30 years down to a year or two, down to where we're talking social media. If you're advertising there, if you can't catch their attention in the first 3 seconds, they've gone by.
Right.
So I think the real thing about that is being prepared, being flexible, being able to adapt to the situation, because it's changed. And if you don't like where you're working, with the Gen Zs that are out there right now, if they don't like where they're working, or if the place is not inspiring them, if they're not involved, unfortunately or fortunately, depending on your viewpoint, if they're not involved with some sort of cause, you know, the whole, I forgot what, ESG stands for, environmental, social, and governance, or something like that. If they're not trying to save the world, save the whales, save plastic bottles, they're on to the next place. And they want something that excites them with their work, but they also want to be making, and this is the good part, they want to be making a difference in the world that they live in. Mm-hmm. And the worst thing that our generation does is occasionally say, well, I'm not even going to be around in 10, 15 years, so why do I care about plastic bottles? You know, right. Or why is the cost of gas so much right now? Well, obviously they're trying to teach us to reduce our carbon print, and it's costing us. And I don't want to get into the politics of it, but the idea is you've got to capture their attention, and they have to be making a difference with whatever they're doing, whether it's the work they're doing, or whether the it's saving the world, you know,
right.
And the environment with it. And I think it's good that they're thinking along those lines. It's a different way of thinking than I was brought up, and it's been a learning process. But that's what we fail to do sometimes, is we don't allow people to learn. We're holding people accountable for mistakes that they made 20 years ago. Now, and we've all changed in the last 20 right. years. My right. opinions about things have changed. Now, I've had my eyes open to new and different ideas. And I think the present generation is doing a really good job of that. We come into conflict. We have different ways of right. thinking things, but they want to make things better, just like we did, only they're right. doing it differently.
Yeah. Well, you know, the thought, as you were talking about that, because you're right. If we all know the struggles in the of labor force, right, and having right. enough people work, and there's some things that are what they are, and one of them is if you're going to take advantage of, or you're going to have to get these younger folks to come in to your workplace. But if you don't establish a workplace that fits them, like you just said, they're either not going to come, or you're going to be a revolving door all day long.
Right. And here's a statistic for you. Think about your payroll, and think about how awful it would be to lose 18% of your payroll and money wise. And that's what disengaged employees are costing you, is 18% of your payroll through the loss in performance. And trying to keep those guys engaged, keeping your employees engaged with the work. I've worked with, for instance, senior care facilities, and the healthcare workers that work there. There's such a huge turnover rate, and it's along the lines of Randy. You just found out that you can get 25 cents an hour more working at this other place, and you quit. Hmm. Well, what do I need to do to attract you so that 25 cents makes no difference at all? Because I mean, we're talking, what is, I don't know what 40 times 25 is. Maybe it's
10 bucks, right?
Or let's see. Yeah, whatever it is. But that's that higher math. I lose. Yeah. If you could spend some money to keep them engaged, what are some of the things you can do? Mm-hmm. They're simple. We talked about earlier, gratitude. Hey, it's mm-hmm. your birthday. Happy birthday. Hey, right. It's a summer day, Friday afternoon, and there's not much going on. Let's go to the weekend schedule. You guys all go home. Let's bring everybody in. And instead of, here's the statistics of how we performed, Randy, what can we do to make it better around here? Keep it, letting them have an input into it. It keeps them engaged, and you'll get most of that money back for. And here's the key: is that 18% loss doesn't show up on your financial statement.
Right.
But we know that it's palpable. If yes. you're inspired, you're going to do your work and a little bit more. Mm-hmm. If you're not, you're going to do exactly what's in your job description and nothing more.
Exactly. That's a good point. So thinking about that. We all think of mentors as guys our age taking this young pup, whatever they are, and helping them, training them, teaching them, giving them somebody to bounce, mentoring them, right?
Right.
But thinking about this, I think there's something to be said for people our age that want to be involved forever, because I have no desire to stop doing what I do.
Neither do I.
I need a mentor that's younger to help bring me along into their world, because it's going to be their world. They're not coming back to us. We've got to adapt to their world. And if we don't know how to adapt to their world, we need to have somebody mentor us. And how do we think a little bit more like the Gen Zs, right?
Yeah. My mom's a good example. She's 92 years old, and I bet she embraces almost every new technology thing. She's doing social media. She's doing, emails. And for a 92-year-old, most of the time, it's complete opposite from my wife's mother. She rejected it all. Oh, I don't need that. She couldn't even figure out how to go from regular TV to Netflix. You know, I mean, the disconnect there, the amount of changes as far as technology have been incredible. And to engage somebody younger to help you with that, think about that. That's a complete different way of looking at leadership, because in the past we looked at leadership as know-it-all, be-it-all. You know, we had executive bathrooms, we had parking places, stuff. Mm-hmm. Now it's, what can I do, Randy, to make your job better, to get you to perform better? What is it that's missing? What do I need to send you to do some learn this new application, this new software? What can we do? It's that servant leadership thing. Right. And again, gets into the gratitude. I want you to perform for us, and I need to show gratitude by letting you save time on some of the tasks that you do. And if you're saving time there and you feel dedicated to the company, now you're going to perform more than what's in your job description somewhere else.
Exactly, because in the old days, you just, like, you took a job for 30 years because it paid for the house and the car and the 1 week a year of vacation and all that stuff. So you did what you did, right? And whether you loved it or you hated it, you still did it. But like you said, with that changing, there has to be that. It really comes back to culture, right? We've got to develop a culture within our organization where people are buying in. I guess that's the word I really wanted to go to. They're buying in. I want to be part of Dennis's company. I want to be part of what we're doing. I love the product or the service or whatever we're doing. I get some input. I get some say. They ask me, what do I want to do, and rather than just telling me what to do.
Right.
Right? Those are super important, I think. And even as us older guys and gals around, I think deep down, we still want that too. We just pretend we don't, because that's not the life we came from, maybe.
Well,
but we all want to be involved.
Yeah. Breaking a habit, breaking a way of thinking. You know, we all, as we get older, we know what works for us. That's why most of the time the innovations come from those 20 and 30 somethings that are still open to everything. What we do to help them is we bring back experience. Maybe we shouldn't bring this software on quite that quick. Maybe there's some more bugs to work on. We should think about how this is going to affect something over here. We bring that experience of, this didn't work out last time, let's explore it further. But the key is, don't get locked in to one way of thinking. This is the way we've always done it. We can't change. Well, then you're going to get the same results.
Right.
You know, I always look at it your leadership is working perfectly for the results you're getting right now. If you don't like those results, the first place to look at is at your leadership. And this is the basis. I've been interviewing CEOs for my next book about connecting culture with the vision. And this is what I've been trying to emphasize, is leaders are the single biggest influencers to the culture, either within your team, within your company, within your corporation. That leadership is what drives the culture. And that culture is constantly under assault and it's constantly changing. So, you know, look at what happens when a company scales up. Oh, we'll scale up thinking that they're going to come right in and fit right in. And it's going to take a while for that, the two cultures to merge and assimilate. And in the process, you might improve both of them.
Right.
If you do it right.
Or exactly.
You end up having a clash. I was involved with the merger at Alaska Airlines, and the clash between the two cultures lasted a long time because we did as best we could to merge the cultures, but it was rough because we just did things differently, and the key was building the relationships where we could trust each other.
Right. Right.
And we don't spend enough time thinking about the relationships and the trust and the commitment that we're looking for out of people. It doesn't just happen because we say it happens.
Right.
You know, it's it doesn't take but about one or two things, decisions, to just ruin a company. I mean, however you believe, one way or the other, you know, Bud Light's decision, somehow or another, they're going to have to recover that from that, hopefully. Volkswagen doing their thing with falsifying EPA statistics wrecked their sales, and they haven't recovered yet from it. Some of the airlines that have had things happen, ValueJet, as soon as they had the one accident that I can remember, they went out of business. Pan Am went out of business for the Lockerbie bombing. Mm-hmm. There's all kinds of events that just literally destroy a company. It doesn't take very long, but it takes a long time to build that culture into something.
Exactly. So maybe the parting thought, because you've been very kind with your time and I appreciate it. How do we get, because what I've heard from you, and I think it's very viable, is you've got these two factors, right? You got the younger folks, whatever gen, whatever they are, that, well, you're just an old guy. You've been around forever. Your ideas are stupid. You don't understand the new world. You just need to shut up and go away.
Yeah.
Then you got the older generation going, you guys are young. You haven't seen what we've seen. You haven't been through what we've been through. You just need to just set in your place and stay out of what we're telling you you need to do. How do we, in Dennis's perfect world, where's that start? It starts with leadership, right? Somebody's got to bring these two sides together and say, look, we're no longer going to be the old guy and the young guy. We're going to be a team here, and nobody's opinion's wrong. Nobody's opinion's going to be discarded, and let's figure out a way to make this work together, right? Is that the answer?
Yeah, it is. And the way it is building those relationships so that you build the trust. It starts with communicating and connecting with people, you know, making sure that the old guys and the younger employees have an opportunity to learn a little bit about each other. If you keep them separate, or if we're, you know, it's the old, we referred to it earlier, back when the leaders had executive bathrooms and parking mm-hmm. places and stuff like that. Well, all that does is separate you from everybody. You got to have that communication, that connection, before you're going to get the commitment and the trust that you need. It's being concerned about each other. And bottom line is, you're a servant leader now. We're not doing the old style of leadership. There may be a time, if we're charging a machine gun nest, we referred to that earlier. Yes, you're going to be authoritative. This needs to be done. That means do it now, you know.
Right.
But for the most part, we're building relationships to build the trust. And there's nothing that gets that working faster than being able to socialize, you know, being able to put people in a room. Hey, we have this problem. Put three or four people, come up with four options for us. Don't say, oh, from my experience, this and this work. Well, they may not work anymore.
Right.
Plus, I'm making a connection by empowering those people to come with three or four options.
Right.
that makes sense.
Yeah. It does. It does. So as we finish up here, let's talk about your book quick. I want to make sure people know how to get a hold of your book. So give me the Dennis version of the book and why they should read it and what they're going to learn from it. If you don't
mind. This is, I referred to it earlier. This is a book about my heart attack and the recovery from it. I immediately lost my medical and could no longer fly. The first few years I was trying to get back into aviation, the jobs just, they were not ones that I felt like I could get excited about. There's a lot of thought put into it from the standpoint of the 18-year-old that doesn't know where they're going, and now the 56-year-old that doesn't know what to do, you know, and the thought processes that went through to gain back that excitement about going to work and making a difference. Because for a while there, and I'm not going to joke around about it at all, in the book I referred to it, that I was devastated because that's all I wanted to do was be a professional pilot. Mm-hmm. And now it was like one day I was flying and the next day I could never fly again. It wasn't like, oh, you have a retirement or here's a 2 weeks notice or I've got plans in retirement. I'm going to do something different. It was just like a guillotine. One day I'm flying, the next day I'm not. So I think the book has a lot of lessons to and maybe some bumper sticker memory items there so people can understand where they are and how they can affect the outcomes that are yet to come. That's all we're doing in life. If you're sitting back and you're in Geezerville with a remote on a Barker lounger with a Cabernet in a hand, flipping through the channels. No, I don't feel like watching Oprah today. That's one thing. But if you still want to do something, you know, what's important now? What do I need to do now to keep affecting that outcome? And I think that's where I've been. And I think the book expresses that.
Beautiful. Love it.
Yeah.
Well, Dennis, thank you so much for the time. You've gave us more time than you probably more time than I promise, but
no,
I appreciate you being
on. I set aside about an hour. It's fun.
Yeah.
It's good.
I appreciate it. Great. I knew it'd be a great conversation, and just thank you. I appreciate it.
You asked some pretty good questions, some that I hadn't thought of in the ways that we talked about.
Yeah, well, I'm old. I got lots of stuff. Most of it doesn't matter, according to some people, but it you know, they're in there. So I got some, now I have a place to at least bring them out. Right.
Yeah. Exactly.
So, but no, I do appreciate it. And one final thing. Thank you again for your service. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you. All right. Thanks for having me on. And I appreciate that. Is a great conversation.
Yeah. It was awesome. I love it. Love it. All right. Cheers.
Cheers.
All right. There you go, folks. Dennis Mellon, Lieutenant Colonel retired. United States Air Force. You got to love the man because he served his country. You know where I stand on that. You know, this was a great conversation on leadership. I really like the conversation on the young and the old. And we do have to, and both sides are equal with this, I think. And I'll admit, as an older guy a little bit, I'm probably more that way than maybe I should be sometimes, is my way is the right way. And I don't want to hear about your newfangled young version. So I think I learned a couple things on that today that we need to be better at that. So that's it. As always, it's just great to be doing what we love and love what we do. We talked about that today, and that's what I do with these shows every day. Wes and I, and some really, really great folks that we have on, and Dennis was no exception. So remember, live it, love it, and own it, and go out and make today your best day ever. Till tomorrow. Cheers, my friends.
Thank you for listening to Building Wins Live.
You can find information on Randy, Wes, our guests, show notes, and anything related to the podcast at buildingwins.live. On behalf of the whole Building Wins team, don't forget, make today your best day ever. Until tomorrow.